It's November 5th, 2012. This is the Hell Yeah Show. Hello and welcome to the Hell Yeah Show. I'm Alan.
I'm Emery.
And we are bringing you best practices for fine living, advice on how to not let technology ruin your day. Emery, what are we telling them?
It's a much smaller iPad.
It really is.
I'm very excited about the iPad Mini.
Okay, that's good. We're going to talk about it later in the show. We have all of one. I'm looking down at the notes now. There's like one bullet point under it, and it is literally just, it's a smaller iPad.
What else are you going to say about it?
We'll get there. All right. Well, in the meantime, what have you got among your stuff for this week?
This might come as a really big shock to you, but yeah. I recently acquired a new bag.
Yeah. When you told me earlier today, I was really blown away.
Yeah, you were very perplexed.
Yeah.
Shocked, even, I think, was really the only words to describe it. I was looking at some of the messengers from Mission Workshop, and I was also looking at a bunch of other stuff. And then I liked the new Archive backpacks that they were making. And then I was looking around on the eBay, which is like the electronic bay.
Yeah, I'm aware of the eBay.
I got this guy.
Wow.
Which is it's called the Sanction, and it's a pretty slim profile. It's not, it holds more than than the Chrome Mini Metro, but yeah. It's on my back with two straps, which I like, and it has better pockets and better compartmentalization than the Rambler has, which is basically a giant messenger that you just strap to your back. So it's kind of a combination, and now they have a larger version of it.
And they have so you got to get that too.
No, I don't know about that, but they have, sometimes they make special editions of these bags. And I was kind of curious to see how I liked this this size. And it's definitely, I wish it held a little bit more sometimes, but then I'm also like, well, I also think it should hold a little bit less, because I have a tendency to, like, shove a bunch of stuff in there that I don't even need.
Mm.
But, like, the one thing that, like, I think to give it, like, a really fair assessment, though, I have to say that it's a really well-made bag. It's excellent. And it holds what I need it to, and it gets me to and from work, and I don't worry about slapping people in the head with it anymore.
Oh, that's always nice.
Well, yeah, because with the Rambler, I mean, it's this, right? And, I mean, for people that are not watching, it's a ginormous bag. And when it's on my back, I have no real, you know, I'm not very aware of it because it's just huge, and I'm sure I hit people all the time with it. And that sucks. And I've got
a messenger bag that used to hold a 17-inch laptop, and that thing, when it has any decent amount of stuff in it, that thing projects behind you, and very easy to ruin someone's day.
I do like having the Quasimodo effect, though, where I've kind of got, like, this hunchback thing going on where I can kind of, like, hobble around. I do kind of miss that.
Okay. Yeah, that's not something,
So, that was, like, my only real excitement there on the retail therapy front. But
okay.
I was really happy, and this is kind of a bad transition, but I've, you know, the Hurricane Sandy thing that's been going on, I found it absolutely fascinating as the storm was hitting. The impact that it had on just about everybody. Like, people are relying more and more on sources online for things like news and current events and things like that. And there were, like, entire publications that were, like, kind of shut down by this, right? Because, like, Gawker was the big one that, like, went kind of completely dark.
Right,
for a while. So as all this was kind of going down and, I mean, people were turning to things like Twitter to find out what was going on. And one of our friends, JCN, Jesse Chan Norris, he was, like, the guy to report the Con Ed explosion on Twitter. And, like,
wow.
People, like, all the news organizations were, like, quoting him. And I thought that was pretty, it sucks. But at the same time, I'm just like, hey, I know that guy. But then, and, like, everyone's taking all these photographs. And wasn't something like I saw some statistic on like the number of photos on Instagram that were like all hurricane related, like just
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing a bunch of photos around the time that like the first blackouts, and
you got really bad kennel cough.
Yeah, man.
We're gonna talk about your trip later,
London hit me hard, I remember seeing a bunch of civilian and professional news organization photos of the blackouts. I remember those being the first. Seeing New York City in the dark seeing New York City dark is pretty interesting.
Yeah, you know Dan Lurie, right?
I do.
Yeah, he was another guy that had like his photos were being bandied about on various sites.
Oh, really? He is.
I saw him on a photo credit for a bunch of stuff.
He is an accomplished photographer. I mean, I remember he he's been doing concert photography. He's been doing a lot of New York City photography.
That's right.
Yeah,
I forgot all about that.
Yeah. So. Anyway.
I'm looking for a lacrosse ball.
As you're saying, cool and not so cool, but I guess it is nice to see. High quality photos coming out of non news organizations.
That's an excellent point, and it's people have talked back and forth quite a bit about citizen journalism, right? And what that means and how people are how that industry is going to change. I don't know. Did you have a chance to look at Circa yet, the news app?
I have not. No.
Oh, we should take a look at that sometime, because that's another, I think, a fantastic way that people are using technology in a way to facilitate news and reporting that, I don't know, there's definitely a lot of opportunity for change there. I mean, all these newspapers are going broke, and the advertising market does not work the same way with a Craigslist effect, right?
Sure.
So there's all sorts of disruptions there, and it's interesting to see how that happens and seeing familiar names. I thought it was pretty great.
Cool.
I didn't pay much attention to app.net in the hurricane stuff, but definitely Twitter was going crazy. I really liked. I'm still digging app.net quite a bit. I like it a lot. It's been. Oh, I found a local developer. So the first thing I did when I signed up for an account there was I did a couple of like searches for things like in my general vicinity to find potential locals, right? And I'm like, well, it's a pretty small network, so it's really unlikely I'm going to find many people. But yeah, I went on there and I just randomly followed a bunch of people, and I thought this was awesome. There was a someone was saying, I'm looking, I'm trying to find like a used iPhone 3GS, and I was like, as luck would have it, I happen to have one available. And he's like, oh yeah, but I'm way out in the middle of nowhere. I'm sure you don't. And I'm like, I am right down the road from nowhere. So I actually met up with that guy later that afternoon and sold him my lovely wife's old iPhone.
Wow.
So that was pretty cool. And that was, I think the fact that, so this all comes back to like kind of the trend that we've been discussing a little bit, where services that you pay for and things that are, a little smaller have a little bit more credibility and a little bit more weight to them, if that's the right word. I don't really know.
Sure, yeah.
So I was thinking, something like this, I would not necessarily be in a really... My radar would be on and my hackles would be raised, I think, on Twitter if someone, Bumpaddle 55 was sending me messages trying to buy my iPhone. I think I'd be a little skeptical, but when it's like a dude down the road on app.net, I'm like, oh yeah, sure. Didn't really think anything of it. And more to that point, like there was I can't remember who I was listening to, or someone was talking about this service called Glassboard, which is like a way to have a private space. It's kind of like, I don't really know what I'd compare it to, but it's a service that you can use for free at a certain level of service, but you can create like these little topics and then you can add people. So it's kind of like a private social network. So it's like, and it's not like a
Ning?
Yes and no. There's a lot of things this does better than Ning, but and Ning is like the kind of like just an all for one publisher. Although the Ning stuff made like community sites, not necessarily private.
Yeah, yeah.
So Glassboard is all private.
Huh.
So you don't have to, like, you know, fiddle with, like, invitation stuff or things like that to, like, make things private. Like, the default position is that it's private and that you own your data, which is a very different service model from other things like it. I think people should check it out. You know what? If you want to give it a try, one cool feature of it is that you can create an invite code so people can just join. So instead of me having to invite people, if you know the password, you can just join a group. So what I'm going to do right now is make a board called Hell Yeah Show, and then if anyone is checking it out and would like to join a group, they can do that.
So is this just an extension of the forum?
Like, it's kind of
is
like
this
a
just
forum.
A better forum?
It's a much better forum experience, and it's also primarily driven by mobile.
Okay.
So it's there's a web application, and then there's mobile applications, and it's definitely tailored for that. Like, it's not designed to be a public forum, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard for me to explain this. So one of the things that you can do is when you create a board, you can invite people, and you can give them – we're going to find – I'll do it at the end of the show. How about that?
Okay.
Because I don't want to, like, spend time on this.
So, but we can share the link with –
Yeah, it's basically just like it's a five-letter code, and then you put that in, and then you can just join the group.
Yeah. Huh. Okay.
It's pretty slick.
Cool. Yep.
I like it a lot. I don't know that I have a great use case for it, though. I think the people that were talking about using it were for people that have people that travel a lot. We're talking about it because they can have, like, a little private channel. So then instead of, like, using Twitter, because things like Twitter and app.net are great for public broadcast stuff. Same with Facebook, right? And even groups on Facebook have the same similarities where you're essentially in a public space that you don't own. Whereas with something like Glassboard, you can be posting messages to people to a very limited distribution set, and you don't have to, there's really no fiddling to make it just yours.
Okay. Huh.
So I like that. I don't know.
Yeah. I guess app.net being one of them, Glassboard being another one, in a sense, Google Plus being another one, there seems to be a collection of social network-like things with features capitalizing on Facebook's deficiencies, toward, like, keeping your stuff private.
Yeah, and not even, like, deficiencies, but even perceived deficiencies, because in some cases they're even more problematic. Because, I mean...
In Facebook you can keep your stuff private, it's just a matter of knowing how to do it?
Well, no, because, I mean, there's a creep factor that happens where even if Facebook was sparing no expense to protect my personal profile on Facebook, which I don't believe, but even if that were true, when I go to a website and I can see that, like, so-and-so supports Mitt Romney and they're a friend, you know what I mean? Like, there's this weird creep factor where, like, yes, I understand that, like, you know, they're not, like, necessarily selling my email address and my name and phone number to the Mitt Romney campaign, but I think it's really, there's, like, an implied shadiness that they're mining that to give me better ads. And to some extent, they have that same argument on the Google side, but it's less creepy when Google does it because they don't have, like, the names of everybody. So there's that. So I don't know. Like, I think the, you know, perception is always more important than the reality of things in cases like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, Glassboard. So far, I just.
Wait, was that your houseboy that just walked by? Who was that?
Looks,
was that your...
that's the roommate.
Okay.
Glassboard. Yeah. The advantages of being on video for this podcast. I took a look at it. It looks super slick.
It's very nice.
I would be interested in playing around with it. So
see, I think, I mean, like, the, one of the things that I would like to use it for, I think, are that, there's, I mean, on the Google Plus side, you have, like, those circles, right? And so you can send things to circles and whatever. And, but then there's also, like, this, there's something about it where I know that it's associated with my Google profile, and I know that everything that I'm putting on Google Plus is essentially, like, able to be, you know what I mean? Like, there's this, the Google and the Facebook, which I realize Google's, like, 1,000 times bigger than Facebook, but they both have amassed a large amount of data about their users. And I don't really feel like I have a lot of control over that from either of those parties. Whereas with Glassboard, like, their terms of service are pretty explicit. Like, you know, they want it to be your data, and that's how they design the service. And I really like that. I mean, I understand that, like, there's
these are like the mom and pop shops of the internet.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. And you know, and I know, and I don't think that, like, you know, Google and Facebook are, like, being nefarious when they're, like, making weird terms of use or things like that. Like, I think the vast majority of things like that are written by attorneys as a, like, protection measure, where it's like, you know, their primary interest is in protecting the company. And so they say things like, you know, content you upload is owned by us and blah, blah, blah. And, like, you know, on the one hand, I can say, like, well, that means that they're claiming ownership over things. But really what they're doing is they're making it so that when they get a takedown notice for something that's inappropriate, they can do it without having to contact you. Like, I understand where their allegiance is there. So, I don't know. It's just when you are using that information to do things like present advertising or you're selling bits of that data to people, that's when people get touchy. And that's why companies like Apple can get away with, you know, Apple doesn't get a lot of critique for iCloud. I mean, there's people that are like, ooh, cloud bad, brr. But, you know, it's not like there's not a substantial movement against people storing data in iCloud. Because what's the worst that happens? Like, you know, Apple has my data. Like, that's, whereas, you know, if something goes wrong with Facebook or Google, there's potentially more that can go wrong with that. Maybe. I don't know. But that's the perception, which is where I'm kind of headed with that again.
Yeah. All right. Gotcha. Well,
we'll talk about Glassboard more in the future, I'm sure.
Let's get the Hell Yeah Glassboard started, and all dozen listeners can contribute to the community.
Yeah. And if you want to be a sponsor of the Hell Yeah Show, you could be a founding member and send us $5.99. I don't know. I'm just making this up as I go. So, yeah, I think we should talk more about London because you're constantly sneezing and wheezing all over the place.
Oh, man. Yeah, I know. I got sick. I got sick because I was in London. It was a slow onset of the sickness, but I could feel it all the way from the flight home from London. I was in London the week before last and for about 5.5 days. Mm. And I have some things to say about that city, mostly good. So I've got this list here.
I've only been to London once. I thought it was great, though.
Yeah. Oh, London is I really enjoyed it. London is a fantastic city. It's rainy, which is great. They speak English there, which automatically makes it better than Paris. and they do some things really well. So here's what they do well. Number one. They put their meat into dessert foods.
Sure they do.
Yeah, it's great.
Where do you put your meat? Well, that's an honest question. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Not in dessert foods. But I got to say, it's a hell of a combination. You got these, like, you know, steak pies.
Yeah.
Steak pies are great. You've got what else? Like, you know, savory tarts. You've got, like, these onion and meat tarts. You got sausage rolls. You got all this good stuff. It's just like putting meat.
I believe they're called bangers.
Bangers are banger rolls. Yeah, but they're actually called sausage rolls, not banger rolls.
Really?
Yeah, because I guess banger rolls is hard to say.
Maybe they just started. They found it funny that I laughed every time they called something bangers.
That's possible. I think they're very self-conscious about that. Okay, so they do meat and dessert foods well. They do the underground well. They do the London Underground better than any other city. But in general, they do the subway thing very well.
Did you mind the gap?
I minded the gap. No, it's fantastic. I had to get back from the city to the airport, and that involved taking the underground to this rail station. And on the way, I found out that one of the lines I was going to use had been, or like was canceled for the day due to construction. And so I'm like frantically looking through my map, trying to figure out where to go instead. And there's, of course, because it's London Underground, there's like five other ways I could go to get around this problem. But I'm not sure which one to take. I'm not sure if all those lines are running, whatever. I look up, and there's this window in front of me with a call button in front of it and a sign that says, for help, press button. So I press the button.
You didn't press that, did you? Oh, come on.
I did. And there's this guy behind the window. And I press his button, and the guy like looks up and is like, oh, what do you need? And I'm like, yeah, so I was canceled, and I need to get to Paddington, and I think this is reasonable. And I start like explaining how I was going to do it. He's like, no, just go, take this line, go down one stop, switch to this platform, get on that train, and then you're good. You'll be there in a couple stops. It was right fantastic. On. It was great. So yeah, the underground is excellent. The trains run constantly. It's one thing I love about it is all of the signage is super clear. All the like transfer signage, all that stuff. Right. It's just like it has the list of stations that a platform goes to. It's so explicit everywhere. It's great.
I have a lot of like travel anxiety in general, and that's a good point. Like there is excellent signage everywhere.
Yeah, in contrast to one of the things London doesn't do so well, which America does very well, street signs. They put their streets, like France, they put their streets, or at least like Paris, they put their street signs on the sides of buildings. Which,
yeah, and they also put those little plaques everywhere, like so-and-so ate crumpets and had tea here in 1875.
Yeah, it's a historic city, you know.
Yeah.
The other thing they do well, and this is controversial, they do £1 coins. So generally, like if you're going to get change, it's going to be in £1 coins, not £1 bills, right? Whereas, in the U.S., you'd expect a dollar bill.
Well, these coins. The only reason that we do dollar bills here is because every time we've introduced a dollar coin, we stupidly make them the same size as a quarter.
Yeah, no, or we make them like massive, right? We make them
like the silver dollar. Yeah.
Yeah. So the reason I like the London £1 or the British £1 coins are they're small but heavy. So they're not that big. They fit in your wallet okay, but like when you are feeling through like a bunch of change, it is so easy to pick out a pound coin because they're heavier. Okay. They're like a bit thicker.
Can you ballpark the size on those?
It's like 3/4 inch across.
Is it larger than a quarter?
No, it's smaller than a quarter. It's about a nickel. Little small, maybe slightly smaller than a nickel, but way, way, way thicker. Like 10 times as thick as a nickel.
Like a baby's
maybe
arm.
20 times. So, what's that?
Nothing. I've been enjoying this cider. So I'm a little...
Yeah, great.
I might be a little hooked.
Okay, so £1 coins are good. Mobile credit card terminals. You're in a restaurant. You finish your meal. They come over. They hand you the bill. You put your credit card in the in the bill or near the bill. They come around with a mobile credit card terminal and swipe your card at the table. Okay. You're on a train. You didn't buy a ticket. They swipe your card on this little mobile credit card terminal. They just cool. These things are attached to the hip, and they just it's great. It's I don't know why that doesn't happen more often in the U.S.
Because of PCI.
Because of PCI, really?
Yeah, there's like too many restrictions on how people can conduct business and merchants.
And they don't have an equivalent. They don't have a PCI equivalent over there.
I don't know.
Hmm.
It's the same. It's the same banking institutions. I don't know that they have the same restrictions.
Huh. All right. Well, the final thing that London does right is or London does well is rain. Rain is excellent, and London has a lot of it, and I liked it a lot.
Is that like Seattle-level rain?
It's Seattle-level in the sense that it's sort of always imminent. Like, you just always have this feeling of, yep,
did you get
it's
a big
cloudy.
Talk about pickpockets?
No, the, it was...
I had people, like, were like, you need to get, like, a coin or a money belt.
How like, long ago?
2001.
Yeah, see, there's your problem. It's totally been cleaned up.
Okay.
It's like, I mean, it is, I saw like 1.5 sketchy people the entire trip. That's pretty good for a metropolitan area. For spending 5.5 days in a metropolitan area, seeing 1.5 sketchy people is amazing. yeah. But
then you got kennel cough.
But then I got kennel cough. All right. What America does well? Vegetables. I actually like English cooking, but those boiled vegetables that are just kind of like thrown in with the meat, not so good.
Armed insurrection.
Those words do not make sense to me. Oh, armed insurrection?
Yes. I'm pretty sure that America does that better than the UK.
Yeah. Okay. street food. Not so much street food, but the ability to eat food on the street without everyone looking at you weird. that is something America does well. And then having trash cans on the street, which you added, but which I totally agree with. There are no trash cans on the street there. My assumed reason was very different from the reality that you're telling me now.
Well, as far as I understand it, because, I mean, you were saying that the reason that they don't have a lot of trash cans might be because there's just no need for it. There's no, like, vendors and there's no street food, so what's the point?
No, but, I mean, everyone, like, sits down for coffee. You don't take, like, a, you know, cup of coffee on the street, you know, so why would you need trash cans?
Yeah, I was told that the reason that they don't have trash cans is because the Irish Republican Army used to put bombs in them.
Right, which is a very different reason. Like that.
I'm not sure if that was the actuality or what, but that was definitely what I was told. So I was told that very, very urgently while I was standing on the corner complaining that I could not find a goddamn trash can. I was pretty much like the boorish American that people warn you about. Like I was being that guy.
Right. Exactly. All right. Well, so that's my summary of the London London pros and cons. It was a good trip.
Also, there's PCI in the UK. I don't know why I didn't.
I don't know. I think it's a cultural thing. I think it's when you go to a restaurant in the US, you just expect that they're going to take the credit card away and swipe. Or sure. I guess it's more of a like you trust them to take your credit card away, right?
Yeah.
I think I know in Brazil they always do transactions at the table because they had a big problem with stealing credit card information.
Really?
Yeah. So you don't give them your credit card unless they're going to do that transaction at the table. So maybe in the UK it's a similar thing, but I don't know. Regardless, it's kind of nice, right? It all happens quickly, especially for things like, as I said, buying a ticket on a train. It's like I saw someone in front of me buy a ticket in quite literally 3 seconds. Had their credit card ready, credit card swiped onto the next person on the train. It was amazing.
I want to say that the transit for Boston, I know you can buy a ticket on the train, but maybe it has to be cash.
Yeah. So that is London.
I'm glad you went there unexpectedly, though, right?
I went there unexpectedly for work, so it was not a full trip of tourism. I only had intermittent moments of tourism, but what of it there was good. So
you're fortunate that you had a passport.
Yes, yeah, that was good. All right. So, on a completely unrelated note, the other thing I've written here. Is that I've been playing Jeopardy for the Xbox 360.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm not super excited to hear this.
So here's what I'm going to tell you. If you are a fan of Jeopardy, Jeopardy for the Xbox 360 is a fantastic game.
Okay.
It is a shockingly true representation of the Jeopardy experience.
Really?
Yeah, it's you're typing in answers.
Is Sean Connery there yelling at you?
There's no Sean Connery, unfortunately. Alex Trebek is there. Alex Trebek asks every single question. Like it is Alex Trebek's voice asking every single question. And I realize this, and I'm like, how in the world did they get Alex Trebek to sit down and record 5,000 questions? Right, like there are 5,000 questions in this game.
Maybe they just went through all the previous episodes of Jeopardy.
So I think it's either that or consider this. Alex Trebek probably has a decent amount of free time. He's got the Jeopardy gig. That gig probably pays pretty well. You don't see him doing a whole lot of other stuff. Seems like it wouldn't be that hard to get him to sit down and read 5,000 Jeopardy questions.
That is
Seems like something he might enjoy doing. So,
well, I know that I've heard interviews with people that do the voice work on, like, the Madden games.
Yeah, yeah.
And those guys, like, they say it takes, like, for the stuff that they're doing, I want to say they said it was, like, 6 hours in a studio.
Wow, that is way shorter than I would have expected.
Yeah, but that's like color commentary stuff. Like, I don't know if they just I don't know how much, you know, repetition there is in that, because, you know, you might not realize this, but I am not an athlete and I don't really follow professional sports, so I'm not sure. But yeah, they said it was, I mean, it was like one session, or maybe it was one or two sessions. They said total time it was like 6 hours.
Wow, that's I'd imagine that's gone up. I don't know how recent this article was, but
those guys are also, like, you know, they spend their days in a booth doing voice work, so they're probably quick studies.
They're pros, yeah, yeah, sure. But I mean, like,
but so still, Trebek. I mean,
yeah, I would hope in a modern sports game, I would hope there'd be more than 6 hours of voice work. You know, so like spending 6 hours in the booth, you're not. I mean, like, the general rule is you're going to spend, you know, an hour in the booth to get like 10 minutes of voice work, right? Like, it's
yeah. But I think I honestly think that, like, for something like that where you're just like running down a list of names of players.
Oh yeah. I mean, oh, that, you know, that stuff's just, probably yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, I haven't played the game, so I don't really know. So I would imagine, though, that there's a lot of brief biographical stuff that they say from time to time.
Yeah, yeah.
And then things like, you know, holy cow! You know, like, I don't know. Like,
you could probably get through it pretty quickly, yeah.
But 6 hours does seem tight, you're right.
Yep. Anyway, so yeah, that's
but Jeopardy's good? Like, do you
Jeopardy is a very solid game.
Do you play against people, like, online, or can you play?
You can play against people online, but it sucks because the network code is not very good, in that basically whoever's hosting the game is always going to be able to buzz in first.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, yeah, it sucks.
So it's like real Jeopardy.
It's like real Jeopardy, yeah, exactly.
I've heard that's, like, really problematic. A friend of mine auditioned for that show, and they said that there's, like, a lot of, like, weird lag delay stuff.
Oh, yeah, so, I mean, it is... or, like, the system will lock you out. This doesn't happen in the game, but in the real show, the system will lock you out after you press the button. It'll lock you out for a bit, so you can't press the button again and have it register.
You can't spam it. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a very... It's
not like Frost Strike.
Right, right. So, like, I mean, it, you know, you remember... you remember Ken Jennings, who had that really long Jeopardy run. What he said is basically, like, toward... That, you know, even like a few shows into that run, a big reason why he had such an advantage was just he had gotten comfortable with the idea of buzzing in at exactly, you know, with how to detect that exact moment to buzz in. Yeah, 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 exactly. So, yeah, it's that is a big part of it.
The rhythm method.
Yes.
You Google that.
Okay.
No. So, I mean. I haven't... What have I been playing lately? I've been playing... I just picked up... I found a used copy of Uncharted 3, so I have that.
Okay. So you could actually buy it since it was used?
Yep. And I've been playing XCOM, and I'm still liking that. What else did I... I think that's all I've been playing. Yeah, and then, like, some Diablo off and on. And,
yeah,
and
I just...
you were playing... I saw you online the other day because you were checking out the pandas, and I haven't decided if I'm keeping my WoW sub yet, but what'd you think?
Well, yeah, so a couple things. So first of all, I was startled to find the other day that I was still paying for World of Warcraft.
well, this is like the month where it reset from the year, right?
Potentially, I'm not sure. I was on a monthly subscription.
I did the year, so I could get Diablo.
Yeah, well, no, I did that too, and then I think I must have, maybe I started that earlier than you did, because my year was definitely up, and it was on a month-to-month. But I didn't. I mean, I had no idea that was happening. So it's. But I. So I was shocked to find that. And then. And so I logged in, and I'm like, you know, I'm tooling around. And then there's like I run into this weird bug where a boat disappears. And I'm, you know, I'm like, I get on the boat, I get off the boat, and the boat disappears, right? Like, just gone. Can't get back on the boat. I'm like, you know what? Probably a bug because I still have a previous version. I should pay $40 to upgrade. So I did.
Okay.
Yeah. it's a good as good a reason as any, I figure. I have not so since upgrading, I have not experienced any pandas yet. I saw a few NPC pandas. But I've not played a panda. I've not seen other player pandas or any of that stuff yet. So, yeah. But I have gained 3/4 of one level. So that's something.
They definitely. I mean, I played through the starter zone a little bit in beta, and then I'm out there now. But I, like I said, I haven't really had any time to devote to it. Like, that's not a game that I feel comfortable, like, just killing 20 minutes with.
Yeah, well, I mean,
like on Diablo, I can do something for 20 minutes in Diablo.
And your style of playing World of Warcraft seems to have been very focused around absolutely mastering it.
Well, there has been a substantial time commitment.
Yeah,
mainly because my favorite thing to do in that game is the in-game content with large groups. So there's definitely a lot that goes into being prepared for that, and I think that I don't know that I have the time to do that. So I'm kind of not motivated. I think if I could get myself, if I could find a group that would be, if I had a, I guess I should say, like if I had a lot of hope to find a group that I could play with for like 2 evenings a week. So, like, 6 hours a week, I think I'd probably be able to pull that, but that's, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, yeah, so I'll report back if I have more exciting panda-related experiences, but
I kind of like it. Yet. I have no, I mean, I'm kind of digging it anyways, so I didn't really have any negative preconceptions of it before it started, so.
Yeah, yeah.
What's cool. your, I know what I was doing. Instead of playing a lot of games, I've been like watching a lot of TV lately, and I haven't seen the. I started watching Revolution.
Yeah, Revolution.
I like that show.
Okay.
Have you seen that?
Nope.
Oh, it's pretty good. I think it's pretty cool. And then you were talking about the Real Housewives.
I was talking about the Real Housewives. So there is this show. It's not actually called The Real Housewives of Silicon Valley.
I like that name though a lot better.
Yeah, yeah, sure. It's called, I think it's called Startup Silicon Valley, something like that. Or Startups Silicon Valley. This show is premiering tonight. I think 10 p.m. on Bravo tonight, and it is a look inside, a look behind the curtain of the Silicon Valley lifestyle.
Right.
So basically, if you watch this show, in general, the lifestyle that is depicted on this show is precisely the lifestyle that I am leading currently, along with all of my coworkers and fellow Silicon Valley
Justin
residents.
Timberlake?
Yeah, yeah, it's I'm. Hanging out in clubs with Justin Timberlake when I can. All you need to do if you do not live in Silicon Valley but you want to know what it's like, the thing to do is to watch Bravo's Startup Silicon Valley, and you'll get that insight that you've been craving.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Yep. Yep. It's.
I will totally check it out. I like to pretend that and posture like I'm, you know, above checking this show out, but I'll totally do.
Yeah. Okay. So I actually had an email drafted to you. I almost couldn't do this show because I almost had the opportunity to pose as someone's date to a gay club in order to gain access to a premiere of this show.
Wow.
Yeah.
So if you are pretending to be someone's date at a gay club, that wouldn't make you a beard. Would that make you like a mustache?
I'm not gonna weigh in one way or the other, but
that's awesome. Why didn't you go?
It fell through. The connection that was supposed to make that happen did not come through. So it would have been
sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I know. It would have been pretty fantastic, but alas. So, anyway, I'm just gonna have to watch it. I don't even get Bravo. I'm going to find somewhere to watch it, but we'll see. Anyway, so yeah, that's The Real Housewives of Silicon Valley. Good times.
Cool.
Yep. So it was Halloween last week.
I've heard that.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Are you scared, kids?
No.
Did you have trick-or-treaters?
So here's the thing. Wait, actually, okay, keep them entertained while I do something for the video audience.
Da, 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 da.
Oh, okay.
Da, 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 da.
This is the answer to whether I had trick-or-treaters.
That looks like a big bowl of candy that you're still
eating. That's a big,
oh,
very...
damn, son, you got the full size?
Yeah, so I'm like... so
baller.
I know, right? I went to Costco. And I'm like, I want to impress the hell out of the kids in this neighborhood, right?
Oh, so you got used candy?
No, yeah, exactly. no, I got the premium. I got a 48 pack, I think, of like Snicker of you know, full size Snickers, right? Yeah, I got the Reese's that are actually two Reese's cups. I got this was premium candy. Put it all in this bowl. It looked amazing. I got zero trick-or-treaters.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, when I lived in Northern Virginia, the place that I lived the longest, I don't remember having trick-or-treaters, like, at all. But it was, again, it's like, you know, the Real Housewives of Silicon Alley, where we had, like, it was basically, like, everyone in my neighborhood was either, you know, 80 or 20. That was pretty much like the demographic, so I don't think.
Yeah, see, there's. I mean, I know there are kids in the apartment complex, like near me, because I hear them running around. It's like, you know, screaming and playing, right? But yeah. I guess they went somewhere else to trick or treat. So,
We had like in Providence. One of the places that we lived in Providence was in a big neighborhood on the east side that's like lots of people and lots of kids, and so we had tons and tons of trick-or-treaters. Like, there was one year where I'm sure we went through like three or four bowls. So I never could have done the full size there, but then here,
oh, you could have done the full size. You could have,
I think,
done it.
Yeah, I think we could have done it here. We had like a few visits come and it was pretty great. I don't know.
I mean, the thing is, like, you know, candy is not terribly expensive, especially at Costco, right? You could just get this big flat of candy for not that much money. And it's like, but the...
If you don't open it, you can return it.
Candy?
Well, yeah, if you buy like a pallet,
a
pallet and it's still sealed, they'll take it back.
So anyway, but...
Don't look at me like I'm trying to recycle candy.
But like the difference to a kid between like a fun size little like Snickers bar and like a real Snickers, like that difference
when
is
when I was a kid, if I would have had
day.
A house that had full size, I would have, first of all, I would have dropped to my knees.
Yep.
And it would have blown my mind. So that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So I was trying to be, you know, the legendary house.
I think
in
this neighborhood we could get away with that here. So maybe I'll do that next year.
You should. But not, you know, you should do it. Not too many people should do it because I still want, you know, at some point I'm going to be in a place that's going to get trick-or-treaters and I don't want everyone out there.
There's not going to be a lot of crossover from my Midwestern town.
I'm just saying. If this trend starts, it's only going to diminish my ability to give out awesome trick-or-treat candy. So.
Well, I'll just start giving them beer.
that's the next step. You're right.
Yeah.
That's where it gets real. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Man, this house used to give us full size Snickers, but now they give us a 6-pack a month.
Yeah. So that was my Halloween. Any interesting anecdotes or updates on your Halloween side?
Not really. When I lived in Rhode Island, my favorite kid in the neighborhood that would come by was someone who came dressed as a giant can of Spam.
That's good. Yeah.
It was a great costume. Loved it. I did not have anything quite like that I saw, but I don't know. It was pretty good. There was like one group of kids. I turned out the light and pissed off my wife because there was like a group of like what I perceived to be people who are about 16 years old that, like, you know, drove over to our neighborhood.
Yeah, that's no good.
Yeah, I was like, you know, I'm not too
down for
that.
That's so crap. Yep.
I turned off the light, and then I was getting some resistance on that, so I turned it back on, but then no one else came. And we have a very distinctive light on the front porch, too, so it definitely generates attention.
Yeah. Yeah. So, see, there was... I did not have an external light I could turn on, but we turned on all the lights inside the apartment to you know, like say, hey, we're here, come get candy, and nothing.
Did you put like a wreath out there?
Yeah, should have.
your Halloween wreath. Did you hear about Axl Rose? He was doing an interview, and someone apparently, like, he does a big Halloween party every year in his neighborhood, and some of his neighbors that have kids, they showed up, and he had like what he called a Halloween tree. So he had this big, like, evergreen tree that was, like, decorated in Halloween decorations, and then he had presents under the tree. And so when people from his neighborhood went to this party that had kids, and they were like, what is that? And he's like, oh, you guys don't have a Halloween tree? And he's like, oh, go pick out a present. And then, like, the parents of these kids, for like apparently for months, were like, I hate you. Like, I cannot stand you. Like, I cannot believe you did that. I thought that was
pretty cool. That is excellent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. All right, and then let's see. Speaking of Halloween presents, hey, what did you get for Halloween? An iPad Mini?
No, and you know what? I should have gotten a present.
Yeah, you really should have. It was the perfect Halloween present. They released it just in time.
Yeah, you know, people that have been picking those up just love them. I mean, obviously the big draw is that it's a smaller iPad.
That's the main
Apple
selling point.
Well, the Apple event for it was pretty good, too. So if you have, I guess it's on their website, too, but you can watch it on Apple TV. But
yeah.
They had some pretty interesting things about it. And like everything Apple does, the excruciating level of detail that they went through to pick things as basic as the dimension of the device.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's a pretty fascinating look. For me, it was reassuring to see that without Steve Jobs, that the design sense and attention to detail is still very high.
Well, that's all Johnny Ive. That's, you know, the design of the products. You know, Steve is, from my impression, is like Steve Jobs is there to, you know, make sure other people don't mess with Jonathan Ive doing his thing, I guess.
Well, Steve was the guy that if, you know, a product wasn't good and it got to Steve would say, throw it away and start over.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
he was the guy that would actually, like, make that type of a call if he wasn't happy with something. So, I mean, he's definitely, I don't know that Tim Cook has the same.
So how about
there.
That iOS Maps?
Yeah, you know what? Like, people have been complaining about that, and I've never had a problem with it. And I think someone thing like, you know, over 60% of the people that use it said that they didn't even know there was something they were supposed to be mad about. And then, like, the other 33% were picking on, like, you know, one specific thing. And
well, so I mean, you don't live in a place where like five freeways converge on each other, is my impression.
Well, no.
So I mean, I think those are the scenarios that test it in a way that is sort of worthy of complaining about on the internet.
Yes, but to that same point, though, like things like that very quickly get addressed. Like, I mean, there's a reporting function right there. I mean, it's essentially it's TomTom's service, right? I'm pretty sure iOS Maps. When I run the iOS Maps thing, it says that it's like provided by TomTom. Or
okay. Okay. Yeah.
So I think any problems with it are getting ironed out. But I saw that, you know, people were pissed off about it for whatever reason. And one of my sisters was asking me, cause she's getting ready to replace a BlackBerry. And she was like, what do you think of the iPhone? And like, which one should I get? And I'm like, get the new one. But, I mean, at this point I would not recommend anyone get an iPhone 4. I know that they're like free now, but, it's 4S or 5.
There you go. Or iPad mini. Just, you can use that thing as a phone, right?
You know, if they would have released, this would have been a good time for me to test my theory that like the new iPod Touch.
Yeah.
I bet that if they sold one of those with an LTE radio, I would never even need a phone again.
Right. Yeah. Huh.
Well, all I really need is a data service, and then I can use whatever I want.
That's the small iPad. You just got to then, you know, you've got to deal with holding that thing up to your ear.
Well, you don't.
Which
do
I think would be no. I know you don't do that, but I really want someone to do that.
Are you too young to remember the Nokia N-Gage?
No, the Nokia N-Gage was an excellent piece of industrial design. No one would have ever possibly used in the real world. Yeah, that was
the side talking website is still up and operational. So if you want to see pictures of people holding things up to their head that are about the same size as a Nokia N-Gage, it'd be like holding a Nintendo DS to your face every time you made a phone call.
Yep.
Horrible.
That thing was that. Hey, that thing played some serious games.
It was all right.
Looking back at the N-Gage catalog, it's actually surprising the number of games that got ported to that thing.
Yeah.
But
there are more games available for that than there were for my Neo Geo Pocket Color.
Yeah, probably. anyway. All right. Well, the iPad Mini is probably an improvement on that. So
I think it's going to be good. Everyone likes it. My wife is so the regular iPad she does not like to use for extended periods of time just because she finds it a little
heavy?
Awkward because she's holding it. Yeah, it's like because she has to like prop it up, and if she reads a lot in bed, so she spends a lot of time reading like that, and it's definitely a little unwieldy. And I think the Mini would be perfect for that. Plus, like, you know, the iPad she's usually using is like, you know, the Rev A, pokey one, but I'm a little weirded out about the Retina thing. I really like Retina on the iPad 3.
Yeah.
That's the other thing, too, is that there's such a low gap from the last revision to that platform and the new one, because there's, like, the iPad 4th gen now, which is even faster than the already capable iPad 3 and already has some improvements there, too. That's kind of... And, I mean, like, there's someone in my family who just got one, like, an iPad 3 as a present like 2 weeks ago, and then they released the 4th. So yeah, but I don't know how much I forgot to track time today.
That's all right, we got one more topic that I guess we'll go over quickly here. We don't want to stir up too much controversy. You know, we're all about the political controversy here.
We try to be very inclusive.
Yes. Yeah,
for
we try to be
for dozens
of listeners. We don't want to alienate you. It's voting day. It's voting day. It's election day tomorrow in the United States.
Yep. I already voted though. We have early voting here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I voted by mail, so you know, the actual election day, I think, is other than tabulating the results. Voting on actual election day seems to be something people are doing less and less. So it's more about that's when the results all come in.
So the first link I'll have in the show notes, it is not polite for children, but it's essentially find your effing polling place. And it basically you give it your address and it will tell you where to go. And go early and
go
leave
often.
Line. No, don't go often. All you need to do is go once. And then... make sure, because there's in some places apparently there's like lines to vote, and they cannot and are not supposed to close a polling place with people still waiting in line. So don't leave and come back later. It sucks, but if your polling location is that busy, then it's really important that you stay and sit it out. Otherwise, they'll never do anything about it.
Cool. I was going to mention, so there's this proposition in California about food labeling. And regardless of whether you agree with this or don't, it's this really interesting story because this proposition started out with just immense, strong approval, like in the 60%, you know, high 60% approval range.
People, and we should probably explain this a little bit. It's basically that if you're selling modified food, that it needs to be labeled.
Right. Genetically modified food, yeah.
Yes.
And there's, like, it's unclear what exactly constitutes genetic modification in that, like, you could breed your corn very specifically for 5 generations, and that's technically a genetic modification. But what this bill addresses is this, like, very specific corporate immediate artificial genetic modification.
Basically, this is they want to have it so that this type of food is labeled so that consumers know what food has been modified or designed, essentially, and which hasn't. And it's something that is not especially controversial. Like, there are countries, like, I guess, even in China, where you can get counterfeit everything in China. But they have labels for their food that tell you if the food has been genetically modified or not. And nationally, the opinion was overwhelmingly, it's not just in California, but at a national level, people were very much in favor of labeling the food that was modified that way. But then there's this tiny edge case. I shouldn't say tiny, because it's California, which is a huge economy, but millions of dollars get poured into the state to buy and set up this big advertising campaign to fight against this.
I have the numbers. Yeah. So initially, as of September 21st of 2012, 61% were in favor of it. 25% were explicitly against it, with the rest being undecided. You then had this advertising campaign where a group of food producers and associated companies, so Monsanto, DuPont, PepsiCo, Dow, Bayer, and a few others, spent a combined $41.3 million on advertising. And a month later, October 25th, 2012, according to the polls, 44% were in favor of this bill or this proposition, and 42% were explicitly against it. So it went from 61% of people being in favor of it to 44% being in favor of it, and 25% being against it to 42% being against it in a month, which is clearly, very, very clearly attributed to this advertising. So I think it's fascinating, right? Because it is just such an explicit case of people's electoral decisions being influenced by advertising spending. And that's not something – I mean, that's something we're aware of, but it's not something we see sort of a very precise example of that often.
I think that the proposition system, when people have this in states where they have things they can put on the ballot like this, I find it very confusing. And I don't want to say that I'm not a complete moron, but I have a very hard time. Like, if I'm looking at the ballot when they're saying, like, you know, yes or no on this proposition and what that means, like, I find the wording always, in many cases, intentionally weird. Like, there was one in Rhode Island where it was about building a casino in a town that doesn't have one. And, like, I remember being very confused by the wording on this. So when you filled out your mail-in ballot, how was it? Was it really clear, like, how that vote was going to be?
Well, so one thing that – I don't know if this is just California, but one thing the ballot I've noticed always includes is fiscal impact. So it has – it sort of has basically two sections. The first – under each proposition. The first section is sort of a general overview, which can sometimes be confusing. Doesn't necessarily seem like it's intentionally confusing most of the time. It just more seems like it's kind of – difficult to explain in two sentences. And then the second part is always, okay, and here's the fiscal impact on the state's budget or the state's economy. Hmm. So, I've never been too disappointed with it, mostly because it's not that hard to find more information. Like, they send you a pamphlet with more information. It's very, very easy to find more information about California propositions online. So I've never really had an issue. So anyway, yeah, if you want to learn more about this, there is an infographic that I can link in the show notes that has the data that I'm pointing to about this. So
Iowa's big issue right now this year is on retaining judges. So we have this system in the state of Iowa where judges that have been appointed are then have to be, like, upheld. And at election time, you can retain them or vote them out. And there's a big push. It's essentially a retaliatory vote because there's one group of lunatics that is against this any sort of like civil rights protection for gay families. And so when the Iowa Supreme Court ruled that the prohibiting same-sex couples from getting married was a violation of the state constitution, that started like this whole big uproar, and they actually last election successfully pulled out like I want to say four or five of those judges and got them kicked out. And then this time we had a few more that were up, and it's basically really harmful, I think, to have the judiciary be like at the popular whim of a political, you know what I mean? Like, it's definitely, I mean, the whole point of the judiciary is that you have these legal and constitutional scholars who are in a position where, you know, their interpretation of this is going to be different from popular opinion sometimes, and that's just the way it is. Like, there's always going to be, I mean, look at the Affordable Care Act in the Supreme Court. Like, there are people that are still completely incensed over this ruling, and most of the people that I saw screaming about this have no constitutional law background whatsoever. Like, they're just, you know.
Well, that, I mean, that's going to happen, yeah, no matter what. Like, people arguing and, you know, espousing opinions on things they know nothing about is just kind of like a fundamental.
But I understand that. But what I don't want is I don't want judges to have to be campaigning.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Like that strikes me as just monumentally stupid.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
If we put ourselves into that situation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's like the politics permeates everything, right? So, you know, yeah, the Supreme Court judges are supposed to be impartial, but when they're appointed, they're, you know, nominated by a specific party. They, you know, like there are differences in judges that are appointed by different administrations, you know, that sort of stuff. So, like, you can isolate it to some degree. You can, you know, separate the branches, let them check each other, but at some point, politics and opinion are going to, you know, reach everywhere.
There hasn't been a lot of, I mean, there wasn't really a lot of political blowback this election from things like PIPA and SOPA.
I definitely looked into my local, you know, candidates' positions on those things before casting a vote. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But it didn't seem to be as center stage as it could have been. Like,
right.
I mean, there were a lot of people that were, I mean, maybe it's one of those things where, like, the bigger the light you shine on, essentially, state-sponsored censorship, like, people don't really find themselves willing to support that. So maybe that's, you know, it's just politically toxic, so they don't want to touch it. But there's definitely, I mean, there was a lot of money involved on all sides. And I think you and I, like, our industry definitely was favoring the Obama side.
Oh, so you're saying sort of like it just hasn't been part of the conversation.
Yeah, like I don't think, you know, people like in terms of like copyright, DMCA, fair use, those are the types of things that are actually like more relevant to stifling innovation and like economic development and like all of these things that people are kind of trotting out these, you know, arguments about. That I think there's much more influential legislation and legal hurdles that need to be cleared there. That I think have more impact, like the patent system. I think there's a lot of opportunity for things to make very big changes in how, I mean, really what it all comes back to is the United States needs another internet.
We need more internet. We need more internet.
Well, no, we need another internet. Like we need
a better internet.
I don't know about that, but it doesn't have to be the internet, but we need something that will change industries the same way and have.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
It went from, you know, this government project for the military and research groups on campuses in the United States into this global network that has completely upended everything it's touched. And the United States, that's like everyone that talks about the large budget surplus that happened in the 90s, like that was all during the boom. And
right.
you know.
Well, I mean, we can't expect an internet every, you know, two decades like that. That seems ambitious.
Why?
I know. I'll just let's go.
Why
nuts,
do you hate
right?
America?
Why? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think America will fail, Alan. I don't know about you. But no, I think, you know, it's like there's a lot of people that are critical of like the green jobs thing. And I think that people, we need, the United States needs to invent something other than new debt instruments.
we can invent more internet. There is still mileage in this internet
that.
Bandwagon.
But we've already lost that
because
you can get better, faster connectivity in other countries. We've already lost that.
Yeah, I mean we could
catch up, but I would rather do a leap.
Okay, so you don't think more social startups is the path here?
No.
Oh, okay, because I thought that seemed like a reasonable path to me.
No. I mean, I know
startup Silicon Valley is going to save us all.
I really doubt it.
Yeah. Okay.
I really doubt
the way they talk about it, they think they're going to.
I know. I think
there's this. There's some great. There's a CNN article with some fantastic quotes from the show. Talking about like changing the world and, you know, the time is now and yeah.
People all around the world are going to know that I'm pooping.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
That's awesome.
All right. So, yeah, the election is or voting day. Election day is tomorrow. So get out, get out there and vote and your research.
Obviously, I have a preference for who people vote for, but it's really more important to me that people actually do it, especially when if you don't vote, then you really have no skin in the game, as they say. And if you're going to be whining about something for the next 4 years, I don't want to hear that you didn't vote this time.
Yeah, I mean, so from my perspective, it's not like, it's not so much about whether you vote or who you vote for. It's about whether you are making an informed decision. You know, I think like we should. You know, I would be in favor of something that's
like... There are people, though, there's a lot of voters, though, that think that they're making informed decisions because, you know, they went to, like, Fox Nation and
you know, that's,
the Free Republic.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, because, like, you know, as long as you are at least taking a moment to consider, you know, critically consider why you are making the decision you are, like, that, you know, as long as you've done that, you're good in my book, so...
Okay. It's very nice of you, Alan.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that'll probably do it. I think we are over time, although
we
have no idea.
Is this the first election that you've been allowed to vote in?
No, I voted last election.
Oh, with a fake ID.
I casted a historic vote.
Oh, good.
In that last election, yeah, because California really I was the game changer in California.
You were there.
Wouldn't have happened without me. Yeah,
it's like Woodstock.
Yeah. All right, so if you want to contact us, the email address is show@hellyeah.com. The web address is show.hellyeah.com. And on the new internet...
You can find us on the Twitter machine, twitter.com/hellyeahshow. Send us a tweet @hellyeahshow.
All right, with that, we will see you in about 2 weeks.